for me. I did not feel myself, and nothing I did could stir me from my sadness. I thought as much, he said, but I did not know what to do or say that might help. Nothing, nothing you could have said or done would have helped. I might have gone on like that for years, if not for Elva. She told me what I needed to hear, I suppose. It was the fulfillment of a promise she made me long ago, in the castle at Aberon. Aragorn frowned and glanced back into the room, where Elva sat poking at her embroidery. For all they had gone through together, he still did not feel as if he could trust the girl, and he feared that she was manipulating Nasawada for her own selfish ends. Nasawada's hand touched his arm. You don't need to worry about me, Aragorn. I know myself too well for her to unbalance me, even if she tried. Galvatorix couldn't break me. Do you think she could? He looked back at her, his expression grim. Yes. She smiled again. I appreciate your concern, but in this it's unfounded. Let me enjoy my good mood. You can put your suspicions to me at a later time. All right. Then he relented a bit and said, I'm glad you're feeling better. Thank you. As am I. Are Saphira and Fiernan still cavorting about as they were earlier? I don't hear them any more. They are, but they're above the overhang now. His cheeks warmed somewhat as he touched Saphira's mind. Ah. Nasawada placed her hands, one atop the other, upon the stone balustrade, the uprights of which were carved into the shape of flowering irises. Now, why did you wish to meet? Have you arrived at a decision with regard to my offer? I have. Excellent. Then we may proceed apace with our plans. I've decided not to accept. What? Nasawada looked at him with incredulity. Why? To whom else would you entrust the position? I don't know, he said gently. That's something you and Orin will have to figure out on your own. Her eyebrows rose. You won't even help us choose the right person? And you expect me to believe that you would not follow orders from anyone but me? You misunderstand, he said. I don't want to lead the magicians, and I won't be joining them either. Nasawada stared at him for a moment. Then she walked over and closed the glass-panelled doors to the balcony, so that Elva, Ferica, and the Weircat could not overhear their conversation. Turning back to him, she said, Aragorn, what are you thinking? You know you have to join. All of the magicians who serve me have to. There can't be any exceptions, not one. I can't have people think that I'm playing favorites. It would sow dissent among the ranks of the magicians, and that is exactly what I don't want. As long as you are a subject of my realm, you have to abide by its laws, or my authority means nothing. I shouldn't have to tell you that, Aragorn. You don't. I'm well aware of it, which is why Saphira and I have decided to leave Alagazia. Nasawada put her hand on the railing, as if to steady herself. For a time, the splashing of the water below was the only sound. I don't understand. So once more, as he had with Arya, he set forth the reasons why the dragons, and therefore he and Saphira, could not stay in Alagazia. And when he finished, he said, It never would have worked for me to take charge of the magicians. Saphira and I have to raise the dragons and train the riders, and that must take precedence before all else. Even if I had the time, I couldn't lead the riders and still answer to you. The other races would never stand for it. Despite Arya's choice to become queen, the riders have to remain as impartial as possible. If we start to play favorites, it will destroy Alagazia. The only way I would consider accepting the position would be if the magicians were to include those of every race, even the Urgals. But that's not likely to happen. Besides, it would still leave the question of what to do about the eggs and the Eldunari. Nasawada scowled. You can't expect me to believe that with all your power, you can't protect the dragons here in Alagazia. Maybe I could, but we cannot depend on magic alone to safeguard the dragons. We need physical barriers. We need walls and moats and cliffs too high for man, elf, dwarf or Urgle to scale. More important, we need the safety that only distance can provide. We have to make it so difficult to reach us that the challenges of the journey will discourage even our most determined enemies from attempting it. But ignore that. Assuming that I could protect the dragons, the problem would still remain of how to keep them from hunting livestock, ours as well as the dwarves and Urgles. Do you want to have to explain to Oryk why his flocks of Feldunos keep disappearing? Or do you want to have to keep appeasing angry farmers who have lost their animals? No, leaving is the only solution. Aragorn looked down at the fountain. Even if there were a place for the eggs and the Eldunari in Alagazia, it wouldn't be right for me to stay. Why is that? He shook his head. You know the answer as well as I. I've become too powerful. As long as I'm here, your authority and that of Arya, Oryk and Orin will always be in doubt. If I asked them to, most everyone in Sirda, Tirm, and your own kingdom would follow me. And with the Eldunari to help me, there is no one who can stand against me, not even Murtagh or Arya. You would never turn against us. That's not who you are. No, in all the years I shall live, and I might live a very long time, do you honestly believe that I will never choose to interfere with the workings of the land? If you do, I'm sure it will be for a good reason, and I'm sure we will be grateful for your help. Would you? No doubt I would believe my reasons were just, but that's the trap, isn't it? The belief that I know better, and that because I have this power at my disposal, I have a responsibility to act. Remembering her words from before, he echoed them back to her. For the good of the many. If I was wrong, though, who could stop me? I could end up becoming Galbatorix despite my best intentions. As it is, my power makes people tend to agree with me. I've seen it in my dealings throughout the Empire. If you were in my position, would you be able to resist the temptation to meddle just a little in order to make things better? My presence here unbalances things, Nasuada. If I am to avoid becoming what I hate, then I have to leave. Nasuada lifted her chin. I could order you to stay. I hope you don't. I would prefer to leave in friendship, not anger. So you will answer to no one but yourself? I will answer to Sephira and to my conscience, as I always have. The edge of Nasuada's lip curled. A man of conscience, the most dangerous kind in the world. Once more, the sounds of the fountain filled the gap in their conversation. Then Nasuada said, Do you believe in the gods, Aragorn? Which gods? There are many. Any of them, all of them. Do you believe in a power higher than yourself? Other than Sephira? He smiled an apology as Nasuada frowned. Sorry. He thought seriously for a minute, then said, Perhaps they exist. I don't know. I'm not sure what I saw, but I may have seen the dwarf god Gunterra in Trondheim when Oryk was crowned. But if there are gods, I don't think very highly of them for leaving Galbatorix on the throne for so long. Perhaps you were the god's instrument for removing him. Did you ever consider that? Me? He laughed. I suppose it could be, but either way, they certainly don't care very much whether we live or die. Of course not. Why should they? They are gods. Do you worship any of them, though? The question seemed of particular importance to Nasuada. Again, Aragorn thought for a while. Then he shrugged. There are so many. How could I know which ones to choose? Why not the creator of them all, Unulukuna, who offers life everlasting? Aragorn could not help but chuckle. As long as I don't fall sick and no one kills me, I may live for 1,000 years or more. And if I live that long, I can't imagine I would want to continue on after death. What else can a god offer me? With the Eldunari, I have the strength to do most anything. the gods also provide the chance to see those we love again. Don't you want that?" He hesitated. "I do, but I don't want to endure for an eternity. That seems even more frightening than someday passing into the void, as the elves believe." Nasawada appeared troubled. "So you do not hold yourself accountable to anyone other than Saphira and yourself?" "Nasawada, am I a bad person?" She shook her head. "Then trust me to do what I believe is right. I hold myself accountable to Saphira and the Eldunari and all of the riders who are yet to be, and also to you and Arya and Oryk and everyone else in Alagazia. I need no master to punish me in order to behave as I ought. If I did, I would be no more than a child who obeys his father's rules only because he fears the whip, and not because he actually means good." She gazed at him for several seconds. "Very well, then. I will trust you." The splashing of the fountain once more achieved prominence. Overhead, the light from the sinking sun picked out cracks and flaws in the underside of the stone shelf. "What if we need your help?" she asked. "Then I'll help. I won't abandon you, Nasawada. I'll bind one of the mirrors in your study with a mirror of my own, so that you will always be able to reach me, and I'll do the same for Roran and Katrina. If trouble arises, I'll find a way to send assistance. I may not be able to come myself, but I will help." She nodded. "I know you will." Then she sighed, unhappiness plain on her face. "What?" he asked. "It was all going so well. Galbatorix is dead. The last of the fighting has settled down. We were going to finally solve the problem of the magicians. You and Saphira were going to lead them and the riders. And now, I don't know what we'll do. It'll sort out, I'm sure. You'll find a way. It would be easier with you here. Will you at least agree to teach the name of the ancient language to whomever we choose to lead the magicians?" Aragorn did not have to think about it, since he had already considered the possibility, but he paused while he tried to find the right words. "I could, but in time, I think we would come to regret it." "So you won't?" He shook his head. Frustration crossed her face. "And why not? What are your reasons now?" "The name is too dangerous to bandy about lightly, Nasawada. If a magician full of ambition but lacking scruples got hold of it, he or she could wreak an incredible amount of havoc. With it they could destroy the ancient language. Not even Galbatorix was mad enough to do that, but an untrained, power-hungry magician? Who knows what might happen? Right now, Arya, Murtagh, and the dragons are the only ones besides me who know the name. Better to leave it at that. And when you go, we will be dependent upon Arya, should we have need of it. You know she will always help. If anything, I would worry about Murtagh." Nasawada seemed to turn inward. "You needn't. He's no threat to us. Not now. As you say, if your goal is to keep the spellcasters in check, then the name of the ancient language is one piece of information that is better to withhold. If that is truly the case, then I understand. Thank you. There's something else you should know as well." Masawada's expression grew wary. "Oh?" He told her then about the idea that had recently occurred to him concerning the Urgals. When he finished, Nasawada was quiet for a while. Then she said, "You take much upon yourself." "I have to. No one else can. Do you approve? It seems the only way to ensure peace in the long run. Are you sure it's wise?" "Well, not entirely, but I think we have to try." "The dwarves as well? Is that really necessary?" "Yes. It's only right. It's only fair. And it will help maintain the balance among the races. What if they don't agree?" "I'm sure they will." "Then do as you see fit. You don't need my approval. You've made that clear enough. But I agree that it seems necessary. Otherwise, 20, 30 years from now, we may be facing many of the problems our ancestors faced when they first arrived in Alagaesia. He bowed his head slightly. I'll make the arrangements. When do you plan on leaving?
When Arya does.
So soon? There's no reason to wait longer.
Nasawada leaned against the railing, her eyes fixed on the fountain below.
Will you return to visit? I'll try, but I don't think so. When Angela cast my fortune, she said I would never return.
Ah.
Nasawada's voice sounded thick, as if she were hoarse. She turned and faced him directly.
I'm going to miss you.
I'll miss you, too. She pressed her lips together, as if struggling not to cry. Then she stepped forward and embraced him. He hugged her back, and they stood like that for several seconds. They parted then, and he said,
Nasawada, if you ever tire of being queen, or you want a place to live in peace, come join us. You'll always be welcome in our hall. I cannot make you immortal, but I could prolong your years far beyond what most humans enjoy, and they would be spent in good health.
Thank you. I appreciate the offer, and I won't forget it.
However, he had a feeling that she would never be able to bring herself to leave Alagaesia, no matter how old she was. Her sense of duty was too strong. Then he asked,
Will you give us your blessing?
Of course.
She took his head between her hands, kissed him upon his brow, and said,
My blessings upon you and Saphira. May peace and good fortune be with you, wherever you go.
And with you, he said.
She kept her hands upon him for another moment. Then she released him, and he opened the glass door and exited through her study, leaving her standing alone upon the balcony.
Blood Price. As Aragorn made his way down a flight of steps, on his way toward the main entrance of the building, he happened upon the herbalist Angela, sitting cross-legged in the dark alcove of a door. She was knitting what appeared to be a blue and white hat, with strange runes along its lower part, the meaning of which was lost on him. Next to her lay Solemnbum, his head propped up in her lap, and one of his heavy paws resting atop her right knee. Aragorn stopped, surprised. He had not seen either of them since... It took him a moment to remember, since shortly after the battle in Uruvane. Thereafter they had seemed to disappear.
"Greetings," said Angela, without looking up.
"Greetings," replied Aragorn. "What are you doing here?"
"Knitting a hat."
"That I can see. But why here?"
"Because I wanted to see you."
Her needles clacked with swift regularity, their motion as entrancing as the flames of a fire.
"I heard tell that you, Saphira, the Eggs and the Eldenari, are leaving Alagaesia."
"As you predicted," he retorted, frustrated that she had been able to discover what ought to have been the deepest secret. She could not have eavesdropped upon him and Nasawada. His wards would have prevented it. And so far as he knew, no one had told her or Solemnbum about the existence of the Eggs or the Eldenari.
"Well, yes, but I didn't think to see you off."
"How did you find out? From Arya?"
"Her? Ha! Hardly. No, I had my own ways of gathering information."
She paused in her knitting and looked up at him, her eyes twinkling.
"Not that I'll share them with you. I have to keep some secrets, after all."
"Humph.
Humph yourself. If you're going to be that way, I'm not sure why I bothered coming."
"I'm sorry.
I'm just feeling a bit uneasy."
After a moment, Aragorn said,
"Why did you want to see me?"
"I wanted to say farewell, and to wish you luck on your journey."
"Thank you."
"Hmm.
Try not to let yourself get too wrapped up in your head, wherever you settle. Make sure you get out in the sun often enough."
"I will.
What of you and Solemnbum? Will you stay here for a while and watch over Elva? You mentioned you would."
The herbalist snorted in a very unladylike fashion,
Stay? How can I stay when Nasawada seems intent on spying on every magician in the land? You heard about that as well?
She gave him a look.
I disapprove. I disapprove very much. I will not be treated like a child who has done something naughty. Nope. The time has come for Solombum and me to relocate to more friendly climes. The Beor Mountains, perhaps, or to Weldenvarden.
Aragorn hesitated for a moment, and then said,
Would you like to come with Saphira and me?
Solombum opened one eye and studied him for a second, before closing it again.
That's very kind of you, said Angela, but I think we will decline, at least for the time being. Sitting around guarding the Eldunari and training new riders seems boring, although raising a clutch of dragons is sure to prove exciting. But no, for the time being, Solombum and I will stay in Alagazia. Besides, I want to keep an eye on Elva for the next few years, even if I can't watch over her in person.
Haven't you had your fill of interesting events?
Never! They're the spice of life!
She held up her half-finished hat.
How do you like it?
It's nice. The blue is pretty.
But what do the runes say?
Raxacora...
Oh, never mind. It wouldn't mean anything to you anyway. Safe travels to you and Saphira, Aragorn. And remember to watch out for earwigs and wild hamsters. Ferocious things, wild hamsters.
He smiled, despite himself.
Safe travels to you as well. And to you, Solombum.
The weercat's eye opened again.
Safe travels, Kingkiller.
Aragorn left the building and picked his way through the city until he arrived at the house where Jode and his wife Helen now lived. It was a stately hall, with high walls, a large garden, and bowing servants stationed within the entryway. Helen had done exceedingly well. By provisioning the Varden, and now Nasawada's kingdom, with much-needed supplies, she had quickly built up a trading company larger than the one Jode had once owned in Tirm. Aragorn found Jode washing up in preparation for their evening meal. After refusing an offer to dine with them, Aragorn spent a few minutes explaining to Jode the same things he had explained to Nasawada. At first, Jode was surprised and somewhat upset, but in the end he agreed that it was necessary for Aragorn and Saphira to leave with the other dragons. As with Nasawada and the herbalist, Aragorn also invited Jode to accompany them.
"You tempt me sorely," said Jode, "but my place is here. I have my work, and for the first time in a long while, Helen is happy. Illyria has become our home, and neither of us wants to pick up and move elsewhere."
Aragorn nodded, understanding.
"But you... You're going to travel where few but the dragons or riders have ever gone. Tell me, do you know what lies to the east? Is there another sea? If you travel far enough. And before that?"
Aragorn shrugged.
"Empty land for the most part, or so the Eldunari say. And I have no reason to think that's changed in the past century."
Then Jode moved closer to him and lowered his voice.
"Since you are leaving, I will tell you this. Do you remember when I told you about the Arcana, the order devoted to preserving knowledge throughout Alagazia?"
Aragorn nodded.
"You said that Heslant the Monk belonged to them. As do I."
At Aragorn's look of surprise, Jode made a sheepish gesture and ran his hand through his hair.
"I joined them long ago, when I was young and looking for a cause to serve. I provided them with information and manuscripts throughout the years, and they've helped me in return. Anyway, I thought you should know. Brom was the only other person I've told."
"Not even Helen?"
"Not even her. Anyway, when I finish writing my account of you and Saphira and the rise of the Varden, I'll send it to our monastery in the Spine, and it will be included as a number of new chapters in Domia Aberwyrta. Your story will not be forgotten, Aragorn. That much, at least, I can promise you."
Aragorn found the knowledge
strangely affecting.
Thank you, he said,
and grasped Jode by the forearm.
And you, Aragorn Shadeslayer?
Afterward, Aragorn made his way back to the hall, where he and Saphira had been living along with Roran and Katrina, who were waiting to eat with him. All through supper, the talk was of Arya and Thirnan. Aragorn held his tongue about his plans for departure until after the food was gone, and the three of them and the baby had retired to a room overlooking the courtyard, where Saphira lay napping with Thirnan. There they sat drinking wine and tea and watching as the sun descended toward the distant horizon. When an appropriate amount of time had passed, Aragorn broached the subject. As he expected, Katrina and Roran reacted with dismay and tried to convince him to change his mind. It took Aragorn nearly an hour to lay out his reasons to them, for they argued every point and refused to concede until he answered their objections in exacting detail. Finally, Roran said,
"Blast it, your family! You can't leave!"
"I have to. You know it as well as I do. You just don't want to admit it."
Roran struck his fist against the table between them, and then strode over to the open window, the muscles in his jaw clenching. The baby squalled, and Katrina said, "Shh, now," and patted her on the back. Aragorn joined Roran.
"I know it isn't what you want. I don't want it either, but I have no choice."
"Of course you have a choice. You, of all people, have a choice."
"Aye. And this is the right thing to do."
Roran grunted and crossed his arms. Behind them, Katrina said,
"If you leave, you won't be able to be an uncle to Ysmira. Is she supposed to grow up without ever knowing you?"
"No," said Aragorn, going back to her.
"I'll still be able to talk with her, and I'll see to it that she's well protected. I may even be able to send her presents from time to time."
He knelt and held out a finger, and the girl wrapped her hand around it and tugged with precocious strength.
"But you won't be here."
"No, I won't be here." Aragorn gently extricated his finger from his mirror's grip and returned to stand by Roran.
"As I said, you could join me."
The muscles in Roran's jaw shifted.
"And give up Palancar Valley?"
He shook his head.
"Horst and the others are already preparing to return. We'll rebuild Carvajal as the finest town in the whole spine. You could help. It would be like before."
"I wish I could."
Below, Saphira uttered a throaty gurgle and nuzzled the side of Fionn's neck. The green dragon snuggled closer to her. In a low voice, Roran said,
"Is there no other way, Aragorn?"
"Not that Saphira or I can think of."
"Blast it! It's not right! You shouldn't have to go live by yourself in the wilderness."
"I won't be entirely alone. Blodgarm and a few other elves will be going with us."
Roran made an impatient gesture.
"You know what I mean."
He gnawed on the corner of his mustache and leaned on his hands against the stone lip underneath the window. Aragorn could see the sinews in his thick forearms knotting and flexing. Then Roran looked at him and said,
"What will you do once you get to wherever you're going?"
"Find a hill or a cliff and build a hall atop it. A hall large enough to house all the dragons and keep them safe."
"And you? Once you rebuild the village, what then?" A faint smile appeared on Roran's face.
"Something similar. With the tribute from the valley, I plan to build a castle atop that hill we always talked about. Not a big castle, mind you. Just a bit of stonework with a wall. Enough to hold off any Urgals who might decide to attack. It'll probably take a few years, but then we'll have a proper way to defend ourselves. Unlike when the Razak came with the soldiers."
He cast a sideways glance at Aragorn.
"We'd have room for a dragon as well."
"Would you have room for two dragons?"
Aragorn gestured towards Saphira and Fearnan.
"Maybe not. How does Saphira feel about having to leave him?"
"She doesn't like it, but she knows it's necessary."
The amber light from the dying sun accentuated the planes of Roran's face. Somewhat to Aragorn's surprise, he saw the beginnings of lines and wrinkles on his cousin's brow
and around his eyes. He found the signs of encroaching age sobering.
How quickly life passes.
Katrina laid his mirror in a cradle. Then she joined them at the window and placed a hand on Aragorn's shoulder.
We'll miss you, Aragorn.
And I you, he said, and touched her hand.
We don't have to say goodbye quite yet, though. I'd like the three of you to come with us to Ella's mirror. You would enjoy seeing it, I think, and that way we could spend another few days together.
Rohan swiveled his head toward Aragorn.
We can't travel all the way to do Weldenvarden with his mirror.
She's too young.
Returning to Palancar Valley is going to be difficult enough. A side trip to Ella's mirror is out of the question.
Not even if it was on Dragonback?
Aragorn laughed at their surprised expressions.
Arya and Fëanor have agreed to carry you to Ella's mirror, while Saphira and I fetched the dragon eggs from where they're hidden.
How long would the flight to Ella's mirror take?
Asked Rohan, frowning.
A week or so. Arya intends to visit King Oric in Trondheim on the way. You'd be warm and safe the whole while. Ismira wouldn't be in any danger.
Katrina looked at Rohan, and he at her, and she said,
It would be nice to see Aragorn off, and I've always heard tell of how beautiful the elf cities are.
Are you sure you would be up to it?
Asked Rohan. She nodded.
As long as you're there with us.
Rohan was silent for a moment. Then he said,
Well, I suppose Horst and the others can go on ahead without us.
A smile appeared under his beard, and he chuckled.
I never thought to see the Beor Mountains, or to stand in one of the elf cities. But why not, eh? We might as well while we had the chance.
Good, that's settled then, said Katrina, beaming. We're going to do Weldenvarden.
How will we get back?
Asked Rohan.
On Fëanor, said Aragorn, or I'm sure Arya would give you guards to escort you to Palancar Valley, if you would prefer to travel by horse.
Rohan grimaced. No, not by horse. If I never have to ride another horse in my life, it would be too soon by half.
Oh, then I take it you don't want Snowfire anymore?
Said Aragorn, raising an eyebrow as he named the stallion he had given Rohan.
You know what I mean. I'm glad to have Snowfire, even if I haven't had need of him for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They stood by the window for another hour or so, as the sun set, and the sky turned purple and then black, and the stars came out, planning their upcoming trip, and discussing the things Aragorn and Saphira would need to take with them when they left to Weldenvarden for the lands beyond. Behind them, Ismira slept peacefully in her cradle, her hands balled up in tiny fists beneath her chin. Early the next morning, Aragorn used the polished silver mirror in his room to contact Oric in Trondheim. He had to wait for a few minutes, but eventually Oric's face appeared before him, the dwarf running an ivory comb through his unbraided beard.
Aragorn!
Oric exclaimed with obvious delight.
How are you? It's been too long since last we spoke.
Feeling a bit guilty, Aragorn agreed. Then he told Oric of his decision to leave, and the reasons why. Oric stopped combing and listened without interrupting, his expression serious throughout. When Aragorn finished, Oric said,
I will be sad to see you go, but I agree, this is what you must do. I have thought about this myself, worried about where the dragons might live. But I keep my concerns to myself, for the dragons have as much right to share the land as we do, even if we do not like it when they eat our Feldenost and burn our villages. However, raising them elsewhere will be for the best.
I'm glad you approve, said Aragorn. He talked to Oric about his idea for the Urgles then, which involved the dwarves as well.
This time Oric asked many questions, and Aragorn could see that he was doubtful about the proposal. After a long silence, wherein Oric stared down into his beard, the dwarf said,
If you had asked this of any of the Grimstonsburthen before me, they would have said no. Had you asked me at any time before we invaded the Empire, I would also have said no. But now, after having fought alongside the Urgles, and after having seen in person how helpless we were before Murtagh and Thorn, and Galbatorix and that monster Shrooken, now I no longer feel the same."
He gazed up through his bushy eyebrows at Aragorn.
"It may cost me mine crown, but on behalf of Nurlan everywhere, I will accept, for their own good, whether or not they realize it."
Again, Aragorn felt proud to have Oric as his foster brother. "Thank you," he said. Oric grunted.
"My people never desired this, but I am grateful for it. When will we know?"
"Within a few days, a week at most."
"Will we feel anything?"
"Maybe. I'll ask Arya. Either way, I'll contact you again once it's done."
"Good. Then we will speak later. Safe travels and sound stone, Aragorn."
"May Helsvog watch over you." The following day, they departed Illyria. It was a private event, devoid of fanfare, for which Aragorn was grateful. Nasawada, Jormunda, Jode, and Elva met them outside the city's southern gate, where Saphira and Fearnon sat side by side, pushing their heads against one another, while Aragorn and Arya inspected their saddles. Roran and Katrina arrived a few minutes later, Katrina carrying Ismira swaddled in a blanket, and Roran carrying two packs full of blankets, food, and other supplies, one slung over each shoulder. Roran gave his packs to Arya, and she tied them atop Fearnon's saddlebags. Then Aragorn and Saphira said their last farewells, which was harder for Aragorn than for Saphira. His were not the only eyes with tears, however. Both Nasawada and Jode wept as they embraced him and offered him and Saphira their good wishes. Nasawada also said farewell to Roran, and she again thanked him for his help against the Empire. At last, as Aragorn, Arya, Roran, and Katrina were about to climb onto the dragons, a woman called out, "Hold there!" Aragorn paused with his foot atop Saphira's right foreleg and looked to see Birgit striding toward them from the city gates, grey skirts billowing, and her young son Nolf Avrel trailing after her with a helpless expression on his face. In one hand, Birgit carried a drawn sword, in the other a round wooden shield. Aragorn's stomach sank. Nasawada's guards moved to intercept the two of them, but Roran shouted, "Let them pass!" Nasawada signaled to the guards, and they stepped aside. Without slowing, Birgit walked over to Roran.
"Birgit, please don't," said Katrina in a low voice,
but the other woman ignored her. Arya watched them unblinkingly, her hand on her sword.
"Stronghammer, I always said that I would have my compensation from you for my husband's death, and now I have come to claim it, as is my right. Will you fight me, or will you pay the debt that is yours?"
Aragorn went to stand by Roran.
"Birgit, why are you doing this? Why now? Can't you forgive him and let old sorrows rest?"
"Do you want me to eat her?"
asked Saphira.
"Not yet."
Birgit ignored him and kept her gaze fixed on Roran.
"Mother,"
said Nolf Avrel, tugging on her skirts. But she showed no reaction to his plea. Nasawada joined them.
"I know you," she said to Birgit. "You fought with the men during the war."
"Yes, Your Majesty."
"What quarrel have you with Roran? He has proved himself a fine and valuable warrior on more than one occasion, and I would be most displeased to lose him. He and his family were responsible for the soldiers killing my husband."
She looked at Nasawada for a moment.
"The Razak ate him, Your Majesty. They ate him, and they sucked the marrow from his bones. I cannot forgive that, and I will have my compensation for it."
"It was not Roland's fault," said Nasawada. "This is unreasonable, and I forbid it."
"No, it's not,"
said Aragorn, though he hated to.
"By our custom, she has the right to demand a blood price from everyone who was responsible for Quimby's death." "But it wasn't Roran's fault," exclaimed Katrina.
"But it was," said Roran in a low voice. "I could have turned myself over to the soldiers, I could have led them away, or I could have attacked. But I didn't. I chose to hide, and Quimby died as a result.
He glanced at Nasawada.
This is a matter we must settle among ourselves, Your Majesty. It is a matter of honor, even as the trial of the Long Knives was for you.
Nasawada frowned and looked to Aragorn. He nodded. So with reluctance, she stepped back.
What will it be, Stronghammer?
Asked Birgit.
Aragorn and I killed the Razak in Hellgrind, said Roran.
Is that not enough?
Birgit shook her head, her determination never wavering.
No.
Roran paused then, the muscles in his neck rigid.
Is this what you really want, Birgit?
It is.
Then I will pay my debt.
As Roran spoke, Katrina uttered a wail and thrust herself between him and Birgit, still holding their daughter in her arms.
I won't let you. You can't have him, not now. Not after everything we've gone through.
Birgit's face remained as stone, and she made no move to retreat. Likewise, Roran showed no emotion as he grasped Katrina by the waist and, without apparent effort, lifted her off to the side.
Hold her, would you? He said to Aragorn in a cold voice.
Roran.
His cousin gave him a flat stare, then turned back to Birgit. Aragorn grabbed hold of Katrina's shoulders to keep her from flinging herself after Roran, and he exchanged a helpless look with Arya. She glanced toward her sword, and he shook his head.
Let go of me! Let go!
Shouted Katrina. In her arms, the baby began to scream. Never taking his eyes off the woman before him, Roran undid his belt and dropped it to the ground, along with his dagger and his hammer, which one of the Varden had found in the streets of Illyria soon after Galbatorix's death. Then Roran pulled open the front of his tunic and bared his hair-covered chest.
Aragorn, remove my wards, he said.
I
remove them.
Roran, no! Shouted Katrina. Defend yourself!
He's mad, thought Aragorn, but he dared not interfere. If he stopped Birgit, he would shame Roran, and the people of Palancar Valley would lose all respect for his cousin. And Roran, Aragorn knew, would rather die than allow that to happen. Nevertheless, Aragorn had no intention of letting Birgit kill Roran. He would let her have her price, but no more, speaking softly in the ancient language, so that none might hear the words he used. He did as Roran had asked, but he also placed three new wards upon his cousin, one to protect the spine within his neck from being severed, one to keep his skull from being broken, and one to safeguard his organs. All else, Aragorn felt confident he could heal if necessary, as long as Birgit did not start cutting off limbs.
It is done, he said.
Roran nodded, and to Birgit said,
Take your price of me, then, and let this be an end to the quarrel between us.
You will not fight me?
No.
Birgit eyed him for a moment. Then she threw her shield onto the ground, crossed the few remaining feet that separated her from Roran, and placed the edge of her sword against Roran's breast. In a voice loud enough for only Roran to hear, though Aragorn and Arya did as well, with their cat-like acuity, she said,
I loved Quimby. He was my life. And he died because of you.
I'm sorry, Roran whispered.
Birgit,
pleaded Katrina,
please.
No one moved, not even the dragons. Aragorn found himself holding his breath. The hiccuping crying of the baby was the loudest sound. Then Birgit lifted the sword from Roran's breast. She reached down to take his right hand and drew the edge of the sword across his palm. Roran winced as the blade cut into his hand, but he did not pull away. A crimson line appeared upon his skin. Blood filled his palm and spilled dripping to the ground, where it soaked into the trampled earth, leaving a dark blotch upon the dirt. Birgit ceased pulling on the sword and held it motionless against Roran's palm for a moment more. Then she stepped back and lowered the scarlet-edged sword to her side. Roran closed his fingers around his palm, blood flowing between them, and pressed his hand against his hip.
I have had my price, said Birgit.
Our quarrel is at an end.
Then she turned, picked up her shield, and strode back to the city, with Nolf Avrel dogging her heels. Aragorn released Katrina, and she rushed to Roran's side.
You fool, she said, a bitter note in her voice. You stubborn, pig-headed fool. Here, let me see.
It was the only way, said Roran, as if from far away. Katrina frowned, her face hard and strained as she examined the cut on his hand.
Aragorn, you should heal this.
No, said Roran with sudden sharpness. He closed his hand again. No, this is one scar I'll keep. He looked around. Is there a strip of fabric I can use as a bandage? After a moment of confusion, Nasawada pointed to one of her guards and said,
Cut off the bottom part of your tunic and give it to him.
Wait, said Aragorn, as Roran started to wrap the strip around his hand.
I won't heal it, but at least let me cast a spell to keep the cut from getting infected. All right?
Roran hesitated, then he nodded and held out his hand toward Aragorn. It took Aragorn only a few seconds to mouth the spell. There, he said. Now it won't turn green and purple and swell up as large as a pig's bladder. Roran grunted, and Katrina said,
Thank you, Aragorn. Now, shall we leave?
Asked Arya. The five of them climbed onto the dragons, Arya helping Roran and Katrina safely into the saddle on Fearnan's back, which had been modified with loops and straps to hold additional passengers. Once they were properly seated atop the green dragon, Arya raised a hand.
Farewell, Nasawada. Farewell, Aragorn and Saphira. We will expect you in Ellesmira.
Farewell, said Fearnan in his deep voice.
He spread his wings and jumped skyward, flapping quickly to lift the weight of the four people on his back, helped by the strength of the two Eldenari Arya was taking with her. Saphira roared after him, and Fearnan replied with a trumpeted bugle before arrowing his way toward the southeast and the distant Beor Mountains. Aragorn twisted around in his saddle and waved to Nasawada, Elver, Jormunda, and Jod. They waved in return, and Jormunda shouted, Best of luck to the both of you!
Goodbye,
cried Elver.
Goodbye,
shouted Nasawada.
Be safe.
Aragorn replied in kind, and then he turned his back to them, unable to bear the sight any longer. Saphira crouched underneath him and sprang into the air as they began the first leg of their long, long journey. Saphira circled as she gained altitude. Below, Aragorn saw Nasawada and the others standing in a clump by the city walls, Elver holding up a small white kerchief, which fluttered in the gusts of wind from Saphira's passage. Promises, New and Old. From Illyria, Saphira flew to the nearby estate where Blodgarm and the elves under his command were packing the Eldunari for transport. The elves would ride north with the Eldunari to Duweldenvarden, and thence through the vast forest to the elven city of Silthrim, which sat upon the shore of Ardwen Lake. There the elves and the Eldunari would wait for Aragorn and Saphira to return from Vroengard. Then together they would begin their journey out of Alagaesia, following the Gaina River as it flowed eastward through the forest, and onto the plains beyond. All of them, that was, save Laufin and Uthinare, who had elected to stay behind in Duweldenvarden. The elves' decision to accompany them had surprised Aragorn, but he was grateful for it nevertheless. As Blodgarm had said, We cannot abandon the Eldunari. They need our help, as will the younglings once they hatch. Aragorn and Saphira spent a half hour discussing the safe transport of the eggs with Blodgarm, and then Aragorn gathered up the Eldunari of Gleda, Umaroth, and several of the older dragons. He and Saphira would need their strength on Vroengard. Upon taking their leave of the elves, Saphira and Aragorn set off to the northwest, Saphira flapping at a steady, unhurried pace, compared with that of their first trip to Vroengard. As she flew, a sadness fell upon Aragorn, and for a time he felt despondent and self-pitying. Saphira, too, was sad, she because of having parted from Fearnan. But the day was bright, and the winds were calm, and their spirits soon lifted. Still a faint sense of loss coloured everything Aragorn beheld, and he gazed at the land with renewed appreciation, knowing that he would likely never see it again. Many leagues across the verdant grasslands Saphira flew, her shadow frightening the birds and the beasts below. When night came, they did not continue onward, but stopped and made camp by a rivulet that lay at the bottom of a shallow gully, and sat watching the stars turning above them, and talking of all that had been, and all that might be. Late the next day, they arrived at the Urgal village that had sprung up near the Lake Flam, where Aragorn knew they would find Nargarjvog and the Herndal, the council of dams who ruled their people. Despite Aragorn's protest, the Urgals insisted upon throwing an enormous feast for him and Saphira, so he spent the evening drinking with Garjvag and his rams. The Urgals made a wine out of berries and tree bark that Aragorn thought was even stronger than the strongest of the dwarves' mead. Saphira enjoyed it more than he. To him, it tasted like cherries gone bad. But he drank it anyway, to please their hosts. Many of the female Urgals came up to him and Saphira, curious to meet them, as few of the Urgal women had joined in the fight against the Empire. They were somewhat slimmer than their men, but just as tall, and their horns tended to be shorter and more delicate, though still massive. With them were Urgal children, the younger ones lacking horns, the older ones with scaly nubs upon their foreheads that protruded between 1 and 5 inches. Without their horns, they looked surprisingly like humans, despite the different color of their skin and their eyes. It was obvious that some of the children were Kull, for even the younger ones towered over their compatriots, and sometimes their parents. So far as Aragorn could tell, there was no pattern that determined which parents bore Kull and which did not. The parents who were Kull themselves, it seemed, bore Urgals of ordinary stature, just as often as giants like themselves. All that evening, Aragorn and Saphira caroused with Garjvag, and Aragorn fell into his waking dreams while listening to an Urgal chanter recite the tale of Nar-Tukwa's victory at Stavarosk. Or so Garjvag told him, for Aragorn could understand nothing of the Urgal's tongue, other than that it made the dwarves sound as sweet as honeyed wine. In the morning, Aragorn found himself blotched with 12 or more bruises, the result of the friendly knocks and cuffs he had received from the Kull during their feasting. His head throbbing, and his body as well, he and Saphira went with Garjvag to speak with the Herndal. The 12 dams held court in a low, circular hut, filled with the smoke of burning juniper and cedar. The wicker doorway was barely large enough for Saphira's head, and her scales cast chips of blue light across the dark interior. The dams were exceedingly old, and several were blind and toothless. They wore robes patterned with knots similar to the woven straps that hung outside each building, and which bore the crest of the inhabitants' clan. Each of the Herndal carried a stick carved with patterns that held no meaning for Aragorn, but which he knew were not meaningless. With Garjvag translating, Aragorn told them the first part of his plan to forestall future conflict between the Urgals and the other races, which was for the Urgals to hold games every few years, games of strength, speed, and agility. In them, the young Urgals would be able to win the glory they needed in order to mate and earn a place for themselves within their society. The games, Aragorn proposed, would be open to every race, which would also provide the Urgals a means to test themselves against those who had long been their foes. King Oric and Queen Nasawada have already agreed to this, said Aragorn, and Arya, who is now Queen of the Elves, is also considering it. I believe that she, too, will grant the games her blessing. The Herndal consulted among themselves for several minutes. Then the oldest, a white-haired dam, whose horns had worn away to almost nothing, spoke. Garjvag again translated.
Yours is a good idea, Firesword. We must speak with our clans to decide upon the best time for these contests. But this we will do.
Pleased, Aragorn bowed and thanked them. Another of the dams spoke then.
We like this, Firesword. but we do not think this will stop the wars between our people. Our blood runs too hot for games alone to cool.
And that of the dragons does not?
Asked Sephira. One of the dams touched her horns.
We do not question the fierceness of your kind, Flame Tongue.
I know that your blood runs hot, hotter than most, said Aragorn. That is why I have another idea. The Heimdall listened in silence as he explained, though Garshvaag stirred as if uneasy and uttered a low grunt. When Aragorn finished, the Heimdall did not speak or move for several minutes, and Aragorn began to feel uncomfortable under the unblinking stare of those who could still see. Then the rightmost Urgal shook her stick, and a pair of stone rings attached to it rattled loudly in the smoke-filled hut. She spoke slowly, the words thick and muddied, as if her tongue was swollen.
You would do this for us, Firesword?
I would, said Aragorn, and bowed again.
If you do, Firesword and Flame Tongue, then you will be the greatest friend the Urgraldra have ever had. And we will remember your names for the rest of time. We will weave them into every one of our Tolkna, and we will carve them onto our pillars, and we will teach them to our younglings when their horns bud.
Then your answer is yes? Asked Aragorn.
It is.
Garshvaag paused, and speaking for himself, Aragorn thought, he said,
By a sword, you do not know how much this means to my people. We will always be in your debt.
You owe me nothing, said Aragorn. I only wish to keep us from having to go to war. He talked with the Heimdall for a while longer, discussing the particulars of the arrangement. Then he and Sephira made their farewells and resumed their journey to Rohangard. As the rough-hewn huts of the village shrank behind them, Sephira said,
They will make good riders.
I hope you are right. The rest of their flight to Rohangard Island was uneventful. They encountered no storms over the sea. The only clouds that barred their way were thin and wispy and posed no danger to them or the gulls with whom they shared the sky. Sephira landed on Rohangard before the same half-ruined nesting house where they had stayed during their previous visit. There she waited while Aragorn walked into the forest and wandered among the dark, lichen-encrusted trees until he found several of the shadow birds he had encountered before, and after them a patch of moss infested with the hopping maggots Nasawada had told him Galbatorix called burrow grubs. Using the name of names, Aragorn gave both of the animals a proper title in the ancient language. The shadow birds he called Sundavar Blaka, and the burrow grubs Ilgrathar. The second of the two names amused him in a grim sort of way, as it meant bad hunger. Satisfied, Aragorn returned to Sephira, and they spent the night resting and talking with Gleda and the other Eldunari. At dawn, they went to the Rock of Cuthien. They spoke their true names, and the graved doors within the mossy spire opened, and Aragorn, Sephira, and the Eldunari descended to the vault below. In that deep-set cavern, lit by the lake of molten stone that lay beneath the roots of Mount Erelas, the guardian of the eggs, Gwarok, helped them place each egg into a separate casket. Then they piled the caskets near the center of the chamber, along with the 5 Eldunari who had stayed within the cavern, to help protect the eggs. With Umaroth's help, Aragorn cast the same spell he had once before, and placed the eggs and hearts into a pocket of space that hung behind Sephira, where neither she nor he could touch it. Kuarok accompanied them out of the vault. The metal feet of the dragon-headed man clanged loudly against the tunnel floor as he climbed to the surface alongside them. Once they were outside, Sephira grasped Kuarok between her talons, for he was too large and heavy to sit comfortably upon her back, and she took flight, rising above the circular valley that lay in the heart of Rohangard. Across the sea, dark and shining, flew Sephira,
then over the spine, the peaks like blades of ice and snow, and the rifts between them like rivers of shadow. She diverted north and crossed over Palancar Valley, so that she and Aragorn might have one last look at their childhood home, if only from high above, and then over the Bay of Fundor, which was scalloped with lines of foam-crested waves, like so many rolling mountains. Siunon, with its steep, many-layered roofs and sculptures of dragon heads, was their next landmark of note, and soon afterward the leading edge of Duwelden Varden appeared, the pines tall and strong. Nights they spent camped by streams and ponds, the light of their fires reflecting off Kuarok's polished metal body, while frogs and insects chorused about them. In the distance, they oft-times heard the howls of hunting wolves. Once at Duwelden Varden, Saphira flew for an hour toward the center of the great forest, whereupon the elves' wards stopped her from proceeding any further. Then she landed and walked through the invisible barrier of magic, Kuarok striding alongside her, and again took flight. League after league of trees sailed by underneath them, with little variation save for clusters of deciduous trees, oaks and elms, and birch and aspen, and languorous willows, which often lined the waterways below. Past a mountain, the name of which Aragorn had forgotten, and the elven city of Othelon, and then trackless acres of pines, each unique, and yet nearly identical to its countless brethren. At last, in late evening, when both the moon and the sun hung low upon opposing horizons, Saphira arrived at Ellesmere, and glided down to land amid the living buildings of the elves' largest and proudest of cities. Arya and Fearnan were waiting for them, along with Roran and Katrina. As Saphira drew near, Fearnan reared and spread his wings, uttering a joyful roar that frightened birds into the air for a league around. Saphira answered in kind as she settled onto her hind legs and gently placed Kuarok on the ground. Aragorn unbuckled his legs and slid down off Saphira's back. Roran ran up, grasped him by the forearm, and clapped him on the shoulder, while Katrina hugged him on the other side. Laughing, Aragorn said, "Ah, stop! Let me breathe! So, how do you like Ellesmere?"
"It's beautiful," said Katrina, smiling.
"I thought you were exaggerating," said Roran, "but it's every bit as impressive as you said. The hall we've been staying in."
"Teildari Hall," said Katrina.
Roran nodded. "That. It's given me some ideas as to how we should rebuild Carverhall. And then there's Trondheim and Farthen Dur."
He shook his head and uttered a low whistle. Aragorn laughed again and started walking along the forest path toward the western edge of Ellesmere, they leading him. Arya joined them, looking every bit as much a queen as her mother once had.
"Well met by moonlight, Aragorn. Welcome back."
He looked at her.
"Well met indeed, Shadeslayer."
She smiled at his use of the title, and the dusk beneath the swaying trees seemed to grow brighter. Once Aragorn had removed Saphira's saddle, she and Fëanor took flight, although Aragorn knew Saphira was exhausted from their journey, and together they disappeared in the direction of the crags of Telnir. As they departed, Aragorn heard Fëanor say,
"I caught 3 deer for you this morning. They are waiting for you on the grass by Oromis's hut."
Kuarok set off in pursuit of Saphira, for the eggs were still with her, and it was his duty to protect them. Through the great boles of the city, Roran and Katrina led Aragorn until they arrived at a clearing edged with dogwood and hollyhocks, where tables sat laden with a vast assortment of food. Many elves, garbed in their finest tunics, greeted Aragorn with soft cries, mellifluous laughter, and snatches of song and music. Arya took her place at the head of the banquet, and the white raven Blagden rested upon a carved perch nearby, croaking and spouting occasional scraps of verse. Aragorn sat by Arya's side, and they ate and drank and made merry until late in the night. When the feast began to draw to a close, Aragorn snuck away for a few minutes and ran through the darkened forest to the Manoa tree, guided more by his senses of smell and hearing than by sight.